With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. I think I fixed the Mach-E.
You fixed it, yes.
I'm throwing my hat in the ring with my fix.
I know you are. What I find interesting, I love that you've dropped the second of these design series. What I find interesting about this
now,
one.
I'm committed now, baby.
You've done two. It must be a thing. I even made a YouTube playlist. I mean, it's a thing now.
I know.
But the C8 was very design-focused. This is interesting because it's not only design-focused, but you have a discussion about market placement in this one.
I think that's what really drove the entire point of introducing the Mach-E.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I had to throw the entire thing out. I looked at this and I thought, is it just a simple tweak here and there? I thought, nope. Throw the whole thing out. Start over. I sketched for a while on this thing. Anyway, so if you haven't seen that, it is the second in the Paul's Design Corner series, fixing the Mach-E.
Yep.
And let me know what you think. Kind of interesting. And there will be more to come. There's lots of very controversial cars coming, but I'm waiting until they're released. And
yes, that's a good way to do it.
One controversial car, Nissan, apparently at the time of this recording, is bringing the Z car back. They've released a video at this point. In the future, we hope it's an actual car, not just like, you know, just the cardboard cutout of your favorite actor that you stand up and, you know.
It exists in a digital realm. I don't know if you noticed, but the entire commercial is digital.
Oh, yes.
And I also don't even know if you thought about this. But if you watch, they released a teaser that is all the cars they plan to update in the next few years.
Yes, yes.
What's weird about the teaser, I'm going to encourage all of you to watch this. Rewatch the teaser. Find it somewhere. Watch it. In the back half, you know that you do that thing where you let your eyes kind of relax, you know, you get gets a little bit out of focus? Do that while you watch the back half because they keep showing
so
many.
Is there like a buried
message
in there?
No, because they keep showing so many SUVs, it looks like the same car keeps appearing at every reveal. It's just the same. The same,
the same.
It's because it's every possible variant of SUV you can imagine. And then at the end, the Z car.
I think the product planners have taken over. It's like, you know, the pigs have taken over in Animal Farm.
Well, you've always heard the joke about it. You get the perfect script with a room full of monkeys on typewriters. So, yeah, I mean, there's all of these kind of things. But I so don't want to talk about this car until we've seen one. And I mean, at least like they've revealed it on a show floor somewhere, even if we weren't there.
Exactly right.
You know, but it's so tempting.
Den16SB asks about our thoughts on that. And Sharif Solomon says, what are our thoughts on this teaser video? Well, you're getting them because we don't want to talk about a car that hasn't actually officially been released. Mm-hmm. I want to do design reviews on cars based on what we think we know,
true,
but I'm not going to.
True, that's good.
At the
that's
time
fair
of this recording, the M3 and M4 have not been released with their new Beaver Teeth. So I'm not going to redesign that yet until we see the actual car.
You guys have to know that Paul is practically, with the podcast not going, he's practically sitting at his little design corner with his pen poised. He is so ready for BMW to drop those two.
Bring that.
I don't know, but I have to jump real quick. Did you notice this question? I have to find it now. Avi said on Facebook, did you see this?
He and his wife
went to the BMW dealer to do some drive homework.
Yes.
And while standing there with the salesman, his wife, I'm sure completely innocently, looked at the X7 and said to the salesperson, is that the one with the beaver teeth?
We need to know what the response was. What was the reaction?
I love that that ridiculous term has found its way into places other than this podcast that is being used publicly. I hope it shames BMW into changing it. I really hope it does.
Well, there's another car that has been revealed as of this recording. That is the Acura TLX and potentially Type S. We're seeing rumblings about the Type S, but we don't know any of the specs on that yet.
Yeah.
But the TLX is a cab rear. It's a sports sedan. Sedans are not dead, people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This thing, I kept looking at the photos and the interior. Everyone, I am floored. Acura has brought the
wood.
This is based on a couple of production, concept cars, now the production car. The two concept cars that we saw, that blue one, and then there was a deep ruby-colored car before that inspired the blue one. They were gorgeous, and we all thought, all right, we can't wait for that to come out.
Yeah.
Indeed, it has. Yeah. It's got a long hood. The styling is very on point. It's aggressive. It's beautiful. Acura has come to play. I love Acura because they're floating out here still. They're just this unknown, and then they drop something, and it's like, great.
Here's the thing about it. The styling,
love this thing.
I totally agree. The styling looks very rear-wheel drive car, and yet it is not a rear-wheel drive car.
We'll see on the Type S. The Type S and its Acura's thing to be the super duper handling.
It'll be the super handling all-wheel drive, but it's front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. And we've driven the RDX and the MDX, and their super handling all-wheel drive on anything they put it on makes an incredibly agile car.
It does.
So
the Type S is the XB Adelgius, you know, extra duper with chicken wire, and I don't know what else it's got.
With chicken wire. I've never seen that as a selling point, but let's try it. This looks great. I mean,
light
look,
things up,
you know. I'm being ridiculous that it needs to be rear-wheel drive, but it looks like it should be, though, doesn't
it? Oh, it does. It should absolutely be. All-wheel drive, we'll accept, but it should be rear-wheel drive from the get-go. That would change everything suddenly. But the Acura TLX, I'm loving this car. I'm amazed.
Here's how weird my brain is. I've already got the TV comparison episode up. It's this. It's the Mazda 6 that's supposed to show up rear-wheel drive with a straight six, and the Alfa Giulia comes back. And we put those three together and have a conversation about oddball, aren't you surprised, sports
and
sedans.
And don't you want one?
Yeah.
Bring that. Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. We've got a couple of cool debates. First of all, from Frank, possibly in Germany. Frank's, your email ended in .de, so I wasn't sure if that was a Deutschland email address, if it was German, or if you just live elsewhere and have that email address. I wasn't quite sure. I couldn't tell, and you don't say where you're at. But Frank wants to learn to track and drift, so we've got his email
like
to
it.
Discuss.
I like it.
And Jack, out in Davis, California, is trying to decide whether to recycle his current car or kick it to the curb. Got an 86 Nissan 300ZX.
There's some interesting aspirated. Conversations here for sure, yeah.
And wants to know where to pour his money, because the money will be spent. We just have to decide where it's going.
We will help you pour it somewhere. It's going to be awesome. DriveShare is the coolest online car sharing platform you've ever heard of. It's simple. By connecting car owners with renters, DriveShare unlocks the joy of driving in some very special cars.
That way, renters can find cars that bring out their driving joy in every moment, while owners earn extra cash to fund their passion.
To sign up, cruise over to DriveShare.com or download their app for iOS and Android. That's DriveShare.com.
All right, Frank, potentially in Germany, but we don't know where you're at. He discovered the podcast last month. Frank, really appreciate you joining and jumping in. Frank is 25. He's only owned boring cars throughout his college time, which he just did the job because of his tiny wallet back then. So did all of us.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
This is all very normal. And he says he's a big car enthusiast. Even though all those cars were boring, he loved details about them, the ones that he loved. And his own racing kind of challenge was to use the least amount of fuel possible. He could always beat everyone he knew in terms of efficiency.
So what happened here is Frank said, okay, if I'm going to have a boring economy car, I'm going to out-economy everybody. I'm going to lean into that economy.
Sound like an original hypermiler, Frank.
Exactly, totally.
He's out of college, he saved some money, and he wants to go to car college now, which means he wants to learn how to drive properly.
All right.
I agree. This is great. He wants the right car or cars with a very nice budget of $30,000. And he says if he really likes the choices, he can get it up to $35,000. He wants a car he can take to the track on a regular basis, use for some backroad fun. Mm-hmm. He wants to start understanding the feel that Todd and I talk about all the time.
Sure.
The physics of driving and improving his skills, that driver upgrade that we always allude to. Learning how to drift is also on his bucket list, so he wants to do that. And he's got space available for $30,000. Doesn't have to be one car. Can be two. Can be three. As long as it's all in the budget, it all adds up to $30,000.
Interesting.
He's already got something else for commutes and errands, and so this will be 100% fun for this car.
He has money, and he has space. This is how car collections start, folks. This
telling
is
you.
We talk about tool for the job. Frank's about to have it.
Telling you. All right. He definitely wants a manual gearbox, something with a mechanical feel to it. Of course, his dream car is the 997 GT2. Yes.
Excellent, yeah.
And the 991 GT3 RS. Yes.
Also good, yes.
But they're out of the budget. He's in love with Porsche. He drove a friend's Cayman and a 996 once. And he says the feel, the handling, the sound, and the steering just gave him the feels. He loves high-revving engines and old BMWs from the 90s and 2000s. All of the E36, the E39s, the E53 X5.
Okay.
And he always feels at home in those BMWs, as his dream car as a child was the E46 M3.
Okay.
Drove a second-generation Miata, did like the handling, but engine-wise, he liked the 124 Abarth better.
Which means he aligns with you. This is why you picked it. It's a guy that really wants a Porsche, can't afford a Porsche. These are the other cars I like that you like as well. So, yeah, hey, I'm along for the ride here, but I will actually contribute, believe it or not, yeah.
I've got some thoughts here. So he's got a weakness for JDM cars like GTRs or the Supra. He tried a friend's Mustang, and that's the one he didn't like as much. Loved the mighty V8, but he said it felt like an ocean cruiser.
Interesting.
Very apt.
Okay. Wow. All right.
So, pop-up headlights are cool. Cup holders and Porsches are cool. He likes those details, but he wants something he can walk away from, click the key fob, chirp the alarm, look back, and just smile because he's so happy that this is his car.
I love it.
And he gets to leave with it again.
We so want that for you. That's great.
Can we help?
Yeah.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. But where I want to start, Frank, are the race schools. I want to start talking about your skills first before we actually get to a car. Because a car is either going to, you know, you'll love it and you'll love driving it, but it might amplify bad driving skills. Mm-hmm. We see that a lot, especially in a lot of wrecks that happen with high-performance cars. It's just amplified poor driving and poor choices because it's got a lot of power, great handling, or it overwhelms you. So in the U.S., if you're in the U.S., Todd and I have gone to Ford Performance Race School, which has now moved from Utah out to Charlotte Motor Speedway. That's all the tarmac programs. The dirt program with the Raptor is still here. And as a matter of fact, we see the SUV program here in Park City quite frequently. We see mm-hmm. lines of Edge and Explorer STs.
Yes.
So the ST Octane Academy is still going on, even though those cars are not for sale new, but they are for owners of those cars, mm-hmm. as is the Mustang School. But you said you don't like Mustangs, okay? I'm just looking at this as a great way to go to a driving school, and it is excellent. Mm-hmm. Now,
I see it.
BMW has a performance driving school on both coasts.
Yeah.
Got it in Greenville, I believe, South Carolina, and also in Palm Springs, Palm Desert area.
Yeah.
So the BMW performance driving school is excellent, and you can drive front-engine, rear-wheel drive cars made by BMW.
Pretty much the whole lineup is there, yeah.
Yeah, and I suggest that because you are a BMW super freak. Bondurant High Performance Driving School is another one. As far as I wish Skip Barber were, you know, kind of still around, but those are kind of the top three that float to the top in my mind as far as great places to go get driving instruction. Now, you can go to many tracks. You can hire pro drivers, just like there's pro golfers at any golf course or any golf club. There's pro golfers right there that can instruct you. Same kind of thing. That's more of a local kind of thing, but these are the top three that bubble up.
Well, and if he's in Germany, then you can go to the ring, mm-hmm. and you can go to our friends at RSR, go to them, they're awesome. Get an instructor to ride a free laps with you in your own car, in their car, whatever. Get that instruction done properly. And that's about as informal as it gets. You can do that a lap at a time. Mm-hmm. And you know, of course, there's plenty of instruction you can get done in Germany as well.
Now, as far as drifting goes, in the UAE, I found Pro Drift, and in Budapest, Hungary, there's My Way Drift School. I know there's various drift schools around the world. But in the U.S., Drift 101 is the top, mm-hmm. we feel, and we know the owner, Naoki. As a matter of fact, he's an Art Center grad, former classmate, upperclassman there.
Yep.
Drift 101, we went there, what now, 2 or 3 years?
It's been a few years ago because it was season one of TV, so yeah.
Oh, wow. It's been a while. Yeah. But that video is still well watched, and Drift 101 has grown and expanded, and they're still offering programs, and Naoki is still in charge. And they are excellent. He is a Zen master. So watch that video.
He's awesome.
He is.
Yeah.
It's a psychological experiment more than anything. It's not drifting.
It's very interesting.
Well, you tell me what you think should happen next.
It's crazy.
And then you go do it, what you told him you think. And then he's like, welcome to drifting.
Yeah. That episode's available on YouTube. It's available on Amazon Prime for free. It's also available on Pluto TV. It's everywhere. It's gotten a lot of views.
Yeah.
Naoki's gotten a lot of business from it, which we're thrilled about because he is awesome. There's BMW does their own drift training in Germany. They have that as an opportunity.
They do.
There's a DriftWorks forum. There's drifting school in Germany. So there are options. Driving Academy in Nürburgring might have one as well. I mean, Germany's got options for sure.
The reason I suggest all these schools first, and it might seem obvious, but of course the driver upgrade is paramount, mm-hmm. and it comes first. Mm-hmm. We've all had cars that we've gotten into, and they are beyond our driving skills, and we get into them and thinking, I got this. Yeah. Give me the keys. I got this.
Look out.
We've all done that. Mm-hmm. But if I were you and I were 25 and I were doing it over again, mm-hmm. I wished I would have gone to driver schools first before choosing my cars. It took the 928 to start ramping up, you know, learning about corners and learning about weight shift and learning about tires. Yeah. It took that car, but it still overwhelmed me at that point in my life. Mm. I was even doing it with my Honda Accords. I was, you know, squealing around corners and trying to, you know, wring the maximum out of those cars. And then, you know, we grew and then, you know, had additional driver training and started doing a lot of track days and drive a lot of high performance cars in a lot of different arenas. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's given us the experience that we have. But if I were to start again, I would start with the two very different driver trainings that you're talking about. These are two very different headspaces.
Totally. in some cases, counter to each other.
Very much so.
Which is very interesting. Let's be honest, the thing you're trying to do the most, if you want to drive on track, is not lose traction. As much traction as physically possible.
Yes.
The number one step of drifting is lose traction. So right there,
step one,
we are not at the same places. Yes, exactly.
And you're drifting. So if you're thinking about your local road and you think, I'll just get a car and I'll just go drift up Saturday morning, drift up my favorite road, please don't do it on a public road. Please do not. You need to start out in the arena, and Drift 101 is a perfect place to do it. And again, mm-hmm. we've talked about the other guy that was there, one of the other students. Mm-hmm. He mm-hmm. was an early 50s guy whose wife had given him this package. He was in construction, liked cars, but had no relation or driver training whatsoever. And instead of a tie for Father's Day, she gave him a Drift 101 day school.
Yes.
And then he started to come back. And then he started to get really good, and then he really loved it. And now he's, at that point, was having a drift car built by mm-hmm. Naoki for him to just go drift in.
He was coming back like weekly.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And he was good.
Yeah.
And pretty soon, he was going sideways at 90 past us around the outer loop while we were in the middle talking with Naoki and getting driver instruction.
Yeah, it was very
funny. And he's out on the outer loop going sideways, 80 or 90 miles
classic.
An hour.
It was very
clouds
cool.
of smoke doing it. So it doesn't matter when you start. Mm-hmm. The fact that you are starting and you're getting that driver training will help you understand car control. And then when you go look at other cars and you're going to shop, you'll say, I've driven a Mustang on track.
Sure,
I've driven a rear-wheel drive BMW 2 Series. I understand those dynamics and what I like and what I don't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And maybe you start to lean more towards drifting and that informs your decision. Or maybe you start like, I didn't like drifting quite as much as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I like, the big track stuff, or I like autocross, or whatever that stuff.
Sure, yeah.
That will really help you inform your car shopping decisions, because at $30,000, wow, that's great. There's many cars in that arena.
Yeah.
You can get for drift. You can get for tracking. It's hard to say there's one car that will do both of those things because they are so different, though.
I think this is the thing, Frank. I'm actually saying to you, get two cars. Because if you actually do have the space to have two cars and you want to genuinely pursue both these outlets, it's tool for the job.
It really is.
And I will say this, the car that you're using on the track could be a car you drive just for the heck of it down the back roads or what, for sure. The car for drifting, I think, if you really want to learn it and you really want to spend time, let it just be a drift car. I'll give you the couple that I'm thinking about right now.
Do it.
The first thing is, I was very struck by various things you've said, and one of them is you said you like high revving, good gearbox, good car to track, good handling, unique, all of these things. I thought, wait a minute. I can get you a great gearbox and check all the rest of the boxes for you to buy. Remember, I'm getting you two cars now.
Okay.
Go buy a Honda S2000. You like JDM stuff.
Yeah, that's a great one.
One of the best gearboxes ever. Really, really good. That car's perfectly happy to autocross and perfectly happy to be on a track. And they are known, I would get an AP2, which is a second gen, but they are known to be a little feisty.
Mm-hmm.
They will get the back out. They will bite a little bit. It's not a hard bite, but they'll bite if you do it wrong.
Yeah.
So that also is going to not only benefit you getting instruction, but also teach you things about good car control. But at the same time, we've been to the ring more than once and watched guys that are, you're not really supposed to do this, but I mean, it's only rules, right? Guys on the ring in their S2000s, either gunning other people down or giving space so they can drift around the corners in their S2000.
Back
now, it's
off
not
and hold up traffic.
Really a drift car.
Yeah.
But my point is, you still see them at the ring. They are phenomenal in many of the things that you want. If you wanted an alt car to that, though, now I chase your BMW love, you'd need an M235 BMW. Get the M235i.
Yeah.
Our friends at RSR have got a fleet of them.
Yeah.
They have beat on them as hard as cars can be beat on, and they keep running. Now, I know, look, they have a garage. They do maintenance. But the key thing with RSR that we've always found interesting is if a car doesn't rent well, which is rare, but some of them don't, or doesn't hold up well, it's in the fleet a couple months. Okay?
Alpine A110s.
Yeah, they had one briefly, and then it went away and they said never again. But here's the thing about that. These BMW M235i's, they had a fleet of them when they first came out, and then a few years later they traded them all for M240s.
Yeah.
But they are one of their most used cars. So that tells me parts are easy and they're robust.
Yep.
So M235i is my other car that you could drive as a daily, But you could, like the S2000, but you could also just enjoy it. And you can get those in manual. Mm-hmm. We've driven them in both the automatic and the manual is fantastic in that car. It really makes that car very fun. That gets you kind of a more modern version of the E46. E46 is awesome. There's nothing against it other than the fact it's now old.
Yes.
You get a new 235 and it's probably going to run really well for you. Now we go drifting. I have your drift thing solved.
Oh, you do?
I have it solved.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. Don't go buy a car you're going to drift that needs to be nice and do anything else.
Agreed.
If you're really going to get a drift car, if that's really what you're going to do, don't worry about, is it nice? Don't worry about what's the interior. None of that matters. Go buy yourself a used, and it can be cheap, Nissan 350Z.
Done.
Rear wheel drive.
Yeah.
Many people have drifted with them. The reasons I say this are multiple. First off, you can get them stupid cheap. They are known to be robust. There are tons of parts for those cars because they get used as full race cars and as drift cars.
Yeah, they're spec racers.
Look at our Drift 101 thing that you brought up. The cars we're in a 240, but the other main car that he uses is a 350Z. It's his other main car in his fleet. Buy yourself cheap tires. Buy a cheap car so you can do these things. Buy yourself cheap tires. Don't worry about that scratch on the paint or this dent in the corner. This is just a car to beat up on. If you want to do something to it, what you do is a steering rack change.
Yes.
Because you can get, and those are available, you can get a different steering rack that offers you far more steering angle than any car being sold is provided with from the factory. Now you have a drift car. Stupid cheap, runs, 350Z, that's all it's for, and then choose one of the others. And I'm done.
I love it. I'm almost wanting you to hold off on the drift car, Frank, before you go to drift school. I want you to know that you love drifting.
I do agree with that. Yes.
Not that you love watching drift videos and people getting a car sideways. That is different. Because the feeling of drifting is awesome. Some people love it. Some people decide, you know what? I just rather people do that kind of driving and I get to watch and it looks cool. So I really want you to experience that first before you go invest in that drift car.
That's very good.
And really talk with your instructor. Okay, if I'm going to get into this, what is a reality as far as cost and maintenance and tires?
Yeah.
And how much am I going to dump into this sport? Or is track driving my thing? You know, a 2 Series is excellent. I love the 2 Series for that because it's still a real car and they are robust enough to be able to track and still drive around and still, you know, just take out normally. It's not like the dedicated track car, dedicated drift car.
Totally. Yeah.
I say don't get that. Just ease into this because you've got a good budget to spend.
That's good.
So definitely, definitely consider that. And I was just watching Ken Block drift his F450 pickup truck that can tow 35,000 pounds. He was drifting that around at track. And
like you do.
You know, when he's towing a trailer, they're tow nuts. They're not donuts anymore. So that's Ken. That's not me. That's on him.
We're longtime users and big believers in Griot's Garage car care products. That's because while many other brands are just rebranded versions of the same few products, Griot's Garage has developed, manufactured, and bottled bespoke car care products since 1990.
In fact, many of Griot's first customers were collector cars displayed at Pebble Beach. And they're a family company based in Washington State, still dedicated to having the best products for every car and budget. In fact, Paul learned his crazy certified Paul-owned car care style directly from Griot's.
We've used Griot's Garage car care products on our own cars for over 20 years, and we wouldn't use anything else. If you're wondering how to get going, they offer free training and techniques through their videos and their website and starter kits that will help your car look its best.
Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all the liquid products are made right here in the USA. They offer 100% lifetime guarantee, so give them a try.
When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, you can now use the code EVERYDAY for 15% off liquids and 10% off everything else on your order. That's GRIOTS. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com.
Jack out in Davis, California has a question for us.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to decide whether he wants to spend several thousand dollars remaking his 1986 Nissan 300ZX, naturally aspirated, 258,000 miles on the original motor, and remake it into something nice.
Okay.
Or chuck it to the curb and buy something else. Now, he's a 24-year-old PhD student in Davis, California. It's near Sacramento. And although he doesn't commute to school, he drives a lot, 8,000 to 10,000 miles a year.
Easy to do in California, yeah.
He says most of those miles are either on road trips, cruising around town, carving the back roads. They do have some great back roads there in Northern Cali.
For sure.
He and his girlfriend currently have three cars. That Z31, her 98 Ford Ranger, and a 2015 VW Golf SCVT. He says, sigh. The Ranger must stay. It's her daily driver. She works on a farm.
Okay.
And it's their main road trip car. It's not fancy, but works for us just fine, he says. The Golf he's going to sell.
Okay.
Bought that as a commuter for his old job before he started grad school. It's worth about $10K and it's paid off. But he's done with the flappy paddles. He's done with all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Understandable.
Well, flappy paddles in a CVT is kind of no success story there. It's like you didn't really succeed at either place, but at least you let me try to interact with the CVT. Anyway,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, the dilemma here is whether to use the money the Golf will bring them to restore this Z31 Nissan back to life, which currently doesn't have air conditioning. It leaks air through the T-tops. The suspension could use a total overhaul. The clear coat is fading. It needs tires and an engine rebuild. So a lot. Or just sell both and get something completely different. The ballpark it would cost would be about $4,000 to $5,000 to fix everything, he says. I think that's low.
But I think that's very low. But anyway, yeah.
But he's hesitant to put so much money into a car when he knows he won't get it back out. And he says, I'm a grad student. I'm on fixed income. But he loves it when it works. It's the first thing he bought when he moved to California, and he's done so much work on the car. He says it feels like a natural, significant step to keep going on it. But should he dump $5,000 or more into a car that's worth $6,000 to $8,000 at best? I think that's also kind of high. I don't know the market for those cars, but it sounds a little high. But he doesn't know if he can stomach it. So if they sold everything, the budget would be about $12,000 for something else. And that's assuming he sells the Nissan. He'd love something that wouldn't appreciate too much. Rear-wheel drive, manual, doesn't have too many expensive parts. He does all of the maintenance himself. And he's got a German Shepherd, so it needs to be at least a 2+2.
Notice that.
He's looked at C4 Vets, but the gas mileage, he says, a little scary. Not sure how nice he can get for $12,000. You'd be surprised, actually. He's looked at Z32 300ZXs like your car, Tom.
I saw this. This is kind of fighting words here, yeah.
But he hates the styling.
Isn't that interesting? He hates the styling of the 90s 300ZX, which, look,
like one of the best parts of the car.
Jack, I'm going to go ahead and admit it. You are one of the people, and this exists throughout, you're one of the people that has the counter opinion to the consensus opinion in that car. I think that car, by most people, I mean, look, I love it. I admit my bias, but I think most people think that is a very attractive Z car. It is, I will say this, the oddball in the lineup, though. So if you like the long hood, I mean, the 400 that they're teasing is in that, much more in the style of his car and the long hood versions. The Z32, the reason I love it is because it looks like it could be a mid-engine car. That's why I like the styling of it.
Okay.
But if you like the classic Z car, that's the oddball and it's just not right.
Right.
I think it's fascinating. Yeah.
Right. So he really is begging us not to blow up the budget. Okay, I won't blow up the budget. He won't take out a loan and start making car payments. He'd rather spend the extra money that he saves on parts.
Okay.
Jack, I have your car.
Do you?
So excited.
Okay, good.
I have your car.
Good, good.
You like old BMWs. You said that.
Yeah.
You're terrified of the maintenance cost. Mm-hmm. I do have an old BMW. They apparently run well. We've driven this car.
Yeah.
According to everything I can find so far, and according to the owner from whom we borrowed this particular car, they run well. You can take them to high mileage, and the parts are still relatively inexpensive. And he said they're kind of easy to work on, surprisingly enough. It is the E36 BMW M3.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
I found you a 1997 M3. Remember when they were making the four-door then?
Yeah.
It was all the same designation. So it's the M3 four-door with 187,000 miles, which sounds high. But this one has new tires. It's very well taken care of. It's manual transmission. Get this, $6,900.
That's good. That's very
good. I'll bet
you
could get it for 65, maybe six, if you work a deal. That's half of what you wanted to spend.
That's good. That's really good.
187,000 miles shouldn't scare you. You're coming from a Nissan with 258. Almost saving you like 80,000 miles, 70,000 miles.
Yeah.
But the point is, the reviews that I've found on these cars are, all right, they're pretty much at the bottom of their depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
You can find, there's a lot of convertible automatics, unfortunately. They're even cheaper.
There always are, yeah.
But the two-door and the four-doors with the manuals are the sweet spot that you want. And apparently parts are pretty inexpensive. You can work on them yourself. And that really suits your description here. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Well, when we did our film Icon about all the BMW M3s, and we added the 1M and the M2, et cetera, that was the discussion we had with everybody we talked to about the E36. And the guy we borrowed the one for the film, he had two.
Yeah.
And he had two because he just loved them. And he lived in, look, he lived in like a condo. It's not like he had a garage.
Right.
But it was a car that he could easily do work on himself.
Yep.
And he had bought one, and then he bought another one, theoretically, to kind of have a parts car. And he realized he liked them both, and they both kind of had different things about them that were good. So he was kind of fixing both of them up and was going to sell one of them. And he literally was of the demeanor where he's like, whichever one sells is the one that goes. He was going to post them both and just go, because he liked them both.
I thought
and
he bought both that ran black one for like $4,000.
He bought it for nothing. He bought it as a parts car, and then realized this is worth this is actually pretty good. If I do, that was the whole discussion.
Yeah.
He bought it to be his like donor car for his good one that we drove.
Right. Right.
And then he realized this is in pretty good shape. It's in much better shape than I got it for price wise. If I just do this and this, like things he knew he could do easily.
Right.
He was like, I can get money out of it.
Amazing.
So yeah, that's an interesting
that's
recommendation.
Stuck out. Like his stories really stuck out.
Yeah,
and stayed
for
with
me. That's good.
All right. Well, that's my recommendation. Honestly, look at the E36 M3s of all the year range. So it's all the late 90s cars right in there. And like I said, the convertible automatics are like a festering sore in the, you know, cars for sale world. They're all, everywhere.
Yes, all of the M3s, it's always the case. You want to buy an automatic convertible M3 a couple years later, they're cheap.
It's like, no, I'll pay you to drive it away.
Yeah,
please come
funny.
Take my M3
very,
convertible.
Very I have some very different cars for you, Jack. I'm still reeling from the don't like the Z32. I'm going to get over it. I'm going to get over it. But here's the thing about the Z31. I think you need to get rid of your 300ZX.
Yeah.
I think its useful life to you is done. And I think...
that was delicate.
Truthfully.
That's well put.
Because the thing you really struck... You talk about everything wrong.
Yeah.
And then you end it with, when it runs, I love it.
Mm.
That's a problem. That's the not... The equation
that's
you want.
That's the flag, isn't it? That's the red flag.
Because so many of us, look, when a car's running well, we love it. But if it's mostly a list of here's what's wrong, and then this tiny little caveat of when it works, I like it. It's like, yeah. Also, to your point, you said it before, Paul, I don't think you can repair this as cheaply as you think. This is the curse of project cars. This is not your car.
You'll find stuff
this is
and
the
it'll
curse
be like,
of project
I wasn't
cars.
I'm counting on that.
They always take longer and cost. It's the same thing building a house. They always take longer and cost more than you expect. Always.
Yes. Yes.
I've never come across a person like, yeah, I had a project car. It was done super fast and was even cheaper than I imagined. I've never had that conversation. Never even heard that conversation.
I took a European vacation on the change.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's going to be a lot more expensive than you hope for, and that's going to make it harder. And once you start doing the repair and you get down that road of costing more and taking more time, you're going to be even less likely to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think let it go. Let the Z31 go.
Okay.
You've got $12,000 to spend. You're selling a Golf. You need a little bit of utility. You want good, fun manual transmission. I only have one car in the category of front wheel drives like you have, and then I go rear wheel drive.
Okay.
But you need to go drive a Fiesta ST.
Those are inexpensive.
Because it is the counterpoint to what you've had in the Golf. It's the exact counterpoint. Still a little hatch, still a little front wheel drive.
Yeah.
Very fun manual transmission.
Yeah, yeah.
And throw the dog in the back and who cares?
Right, right.
It's not a car you need to be the least bit precious about. Everyone we know that drives one loves it. Go drive a Fiesta ST. That is your fun little throw around hatch for no money. It's no money. It's got personality all the time. So there's my one hatchback. But then I was trying to think about, and I went looking. What are interesting rear-wheel drives at this price point?
Okay.
The one that I don't love, but I like the attitude, because you don't have any attitude cars, is a 2010s era, 2010 to 2015 era Camaro.
Okay.
They're just, they would be fun to drive. It's a totally different life experience. Now, what you want is the SS.
Are they cheap enough?
The problem is your budget is the bottom of the SS market. Your budget, conversely, is dead center for the V6s.
On the other hand, if his budget is the bottom of the SS market, that's probably just going to run. He's not going to be throwing a whole bunch of maintenance dollars at it.
It's a totally different life experience. Rear-wheel drive, 2+2, true muscle car feel.
Yeah.
You haven't done this. That strikes me as an interesting new experience for you. They're good in manual transmission. We've driven all the variants, pretty much. So now you are in V6 land for that price.
Yeah.
But I did find a couple of SS at that price. You were like right at the bottom of that market. So that's one.
Mm.
All three of these are very different. The next one I thought of, rear wheel drive, manual transmission, nice place to be, back seats for the dog if you want, Hyundai Genesis Coupe.
Great.
Go get one of those. 2+2, good interior. I suspect if you have the Genesis Coupe, that'll become your road trip car for you and your girlfriend. Oh. I think you'll no longer take the Ranger. I think you'll take the Genesis Coupe.
Ranger will remain farm truck.
Exactly, exactly. Cheap to run, cheap to buy, etc. And then the last one in this same vein is the Infiniti G37 Coupe.
Oh,
we originally drove the Genesis first gen versus the RX-8, which is almost here, but it's a little oddball, I think, for what you want. And the Infiniti. That was our first comparison of those cars. So go find that on YouTube. But the Infiniti G37 Coupe 2+2 with a great engine and a decent interior, I also think that one would become your road trip car.
Those have dropped in price a lot too,
yeah,
haven't they?
Like crazy.
Wow.
So go get a rear-wheel drive 2+2 and enjoy yourself. But while you're shopping, do me a favor. Do yourself drive homework favor and drive a Fiesta ST.
Summer is finally here, and with that comes sunshine and blistering hot car interiors. You know, the leather seats that you thought were a great idea until you scald your legs.
Luckily, all you need is a custom sunscreen from our friends at Covercraft. They're awesome. They're amazing. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car and keep your car cooler when you're off enjoying the sunshine.
These custom sunscreens come in a variety of colors, and they're an affordable and simple way to keep your car cooler in the summer and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens. I love it. It's one of our very favorite car accessories. Remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page.
I haven't heard this term for years.
I think I know where you're going.
It is a question from Barbara Peterson.
Yep.
Which made me laugh out loud.
It's awesome, isn't it? Yeah.
She says, is an Italian tune-up on a turbocharged engine a good idea, or is it asking for trouble? She'd like to avoid carbon buildup, but was taught that red line is bad.
Mm.
She really pushes on it. She starts to get a bit nervous. Is that old-fashioned thinking? For those of you who don't know, Italian tune-up, it just means drive the car really hard. It means red line the daylights
push
out
of it as hard as you can and decide it works better. Yes.
With the entire thinking being that you will blow out the carbon deposits. You will... you know, blow out the cobwebs, that kind of thing. She'll run better. In some cases, it does. And I have noticed when I push my Cayman hard,
yeah,
it runs great.
Mm-hmm.
You and I just had a road trip in both of our cars, and they seem to be weirdly happier now.
I was saying that to you when because I actually drove. I drove the Lotus. This is exactly opposite, by the way. I realize this because it's a gorgeous day here in Park City. I drove the Lotus today to run errands. I took the Phaeton for the drive where I had nothing to do but to transport me from one place to another. I did this on purpose. Very funny. But the Phaeton, honestly, since we got back from our 1,000-mile road trip, it is downright eager.
Amazing.
It's running really, really well. Now, all the same warning lights are on.
Yeah, it's
but
still
it's running
trips, but,
really,
know.
Really well. So I do think there's a thing here. Barbara, a couple of things I do want to say here. There's nothing wrong with Redline.
No?
The engines were designed to do this.
Yes.
Okay? Do not do it on a cold engine.
Yes. I call this mechanical sympathy.
Yes. So once everything gets running, I actually think it helps to drive cars in their full rev range. If you have an RX-8, I'm going off on the weeds here, but if you have an RX-8, you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
The engines are more prone to die on you. So I think there is something to actually using all of a car. Now, your mechanical sympathy term is 100% right. We're not driving in the last 500 RPM all day long.
No, 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 no.
Okay, you're not hammering on the engine. But take it up there and then change gears and take it up there again.
Exactly.
And do it after the car's warmed up.
Yes, thank you.
But why not?
Yes, thank you. I did give an Italian tune-up to my Maserati, as you do.
Yes, you did. You absolutely did, yes.
But you wait till it's warm, and I've been scared. That's a 15-year-old car at this point.
With a wildly brittle and expensive transmission.
Yeah. Everything's brittle on that car. I'm just thinking, I'm the same way, Barbara. I'm just thinking, should I? Should mm-hmm. I? And then, you know, once she's warm and running well, I do. But I don't just hang out there. I'm not driving around at Redline. None of us are.
Yeah.
You want to take it there, give it the beans.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, if you want the more technical answer, our friend Jason Fenske over at Engineering Explained has done a video on this particular subject. And he did it based on a study by the Society of Automotive Engineers.
Okay.
And they have multiple findings. Ultimately, what it comes down to is it depends on the engine itself.
Mm.
Depends on the age of the engine, of course. But what they found was that a direct injection turbocharged engine at high loads might actually increase the chance of carbon deposits forming.
Interesting.
But then if you keep it going long enough, then there's potential for the heat to then clean them back out.
Turns the other way, of course. That absolutely sounds like something Jason would have uncovered. I applaud him. He always does stuff like
really,
that. It's great.
I think he just leaves it kind of, it's not vague, but it's still a little bit, kind of just depends on the engine, yeah, really. But it shouldn't be a problem. If your engine is well cared for and it's warmed up, honestly, in most cases, it shouldn't be a problem. And it should only help the car.
Dallas Mills on Instagram has a great question that I have to speak to for a minute. And he says, how much longer are we keeping our crazy big sedans, since we're already talking about it, before we're raffling them off? We are giving those away to those of you that helped us get in them. So that is going to happen. It's probably going to be end of summer or early fall, because we have shot our second to last video with them. Now, I realize we're actually now two videos back on stuff we've shot that's going to come out. So we have an autocross video coming out in a little over a week. We have our big road trip video coming out and another one that we're doing down the line that we have not shot yet. Those three videos are still to come out on those big cars. And at that point, we really are done with the stuff we wanted to cover on those big cars. By the time we get all those shot, it'll probably be end of the summer. So then we'll set up the whole setup for giving them away and who are they going to and all that kind of thing. So my guess is end of summer, early fall. And I will tease, and I am teasing here, we have figured out, but we are not yet sharing, our next idea
in this vein
of getting something and talking about it over time. We're figuring out we've loved these big sedans. We were talking earlier about the fact that we're going to be a little sad to see them go, and we're both surprised by that.
Yeah.
But they are both going to go, as far as we know, unless you guys say, please, please don't give us that car. It's going to go.
We'll just go to the next person on the list and foist it upon them.
We'll probably do that right around the fall.
All right. Well, Luis Pepe asks, if we think the Hyundai N brand will ever be able to compete with Porsche, BMW M, and Mercedes AMG. Luis, apologies if I have pronounced your name incorrectly. But I don't think from a cachet standpoint it will.
Mm.
But keep in mind, Hyundai has Albert Bierman.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, he does. Yes, he's there now. Yeah.
From BMW.
Mm-hmm.
And so, from a performance at a lower price, not the cachet, but still bring that kind of performance and just amazing value, they're not competing in that sense, but they're already making a name for themselves.
Yes, they are. Yes. You see this question from Gabriel? I had to call it out. Gabriel Bonneau said on Facebook, what are our thoughts on BMW manual transmissions? I'm not sure if you're kidding, because the last episode, like the one prior to this, we had a huge conversation about manual transmissions versus automatics, etc. And we went on a whole tangent about BMW manuals and how they relate to the Supra and all kinds of stuff. So we have much discussion about that there. We've mentioned some stuff in our BMW reviews, and there's also some discussion of it in our BMW film icon. But literally last podcast, we talked on it.
Impossible Schemes on Instagram asks how you go about talking to a dealer about a problem found on the car long after you've purchased
this it. This is nuts. I saw this. This is crazy.
There were 12 shipping pucks left in the suspension of this Golf R that was purchased new, and they weren't found for almost a year. On the plus side, the car rides great now.
now it's the car he thought it would be.
How do you discuss with the dealer about this?
Couple of questions I have, though, honestly. The first two questions, and we don't know what the answers are, but I'm going to float these questions. First off, who found them?
Who found them?
Because here's the thing. If the dealer found them, that discussion just got a lot easier. For the first year, you've had all your maintenance done at the dealer.
Theoretically.
So I'm guessing so. And I would think that the dealer eventually found them. Now, so that's a big thing. Because if you found them yourself one day in the garage, it gets a lot harder to document this. If the dealer found them while it was in for service, your guys, your records. But then my second question, and this is a very unclear answer. What do you want the dealer to do? Because you didn't get in a wreck. The car runs better now.
Yeah, it's undamaged.
So while this is insane, it's an insane situation. What I'm asking, what do you want the dealer to do for you?
What do you want to get out of it? I think if you do want to go ahead and talk to the dealer about this, if you expect to be a repeat customer and you want them to know that, you know, you think you'd like to purchase something in the future and you're a repeat customer and you've got reviews.
And this is unacceptable.
At your disposal. I've always thought about starting at the top. I'd never go back to people whose job it is to not care, honestly. I hate to say this, but any service or tech person, isn't going to care. They're just not. But the person who runs the dealership and has the public's perception of the dealership mm-hmm. and how well mm-hmm. you as a customer are taken care of, they are going to care.
Mm.
But you could position it not as coming in as complaining. Position it as, hey, I want to help you out. I want you to, you know, identify here's something that occurred.
Yes.
Thankfully, nothing happened.
Yes.
But I want to help you improve your employees mm. and your attention to detail. Could I talk to you? Mm-hmm. So you call and ask for the general manager or yeah. the owner or, yeah. you know, I've always started at the top and they'll say, what is this about? And you can really position it as, hey, I've got a real good suggestion on how to improve things. And I just like 10 minutes of your time. I want to stop by.
Yeah.
10 minutes of your time. You can get their attention on the surveys that dealers send you. If you don't give a perfect score on those surveys, they don't, in some cases, it docks their pay or they don't get the pay they were expecting.
That's possible.
If you give them a hugely negative or a zero score, they might call you and ask you why.
Maybe.
I've had that happen because gave them when I had my Jeep, mm-hmm. I gave the dealer a well-deserved poor score mm-hmm. on the survey.
Mm.
And they called me the next day and said, holy cow, what did we do wrong?
Mm,
they saw the survey. It yeah. does matter. Mm. And it directly affects the service tech's pay.
Wow.
So unless they can submit all these surveys back to the OEM and say, look, we're a great dealer. No, we're doing a great mm-hmm. job. The car company's going to be like, sorry, we're not going to give you those extra bonuses.
Interesting.
So you can get their attention that way.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily good in this case because you didn't wreck, as Todd said. The car's yeah. undamaged. It's not like some big problem occurred.
Yeah.
So that's not necessary. But what if you positioned it as, hey, I want to help you.
I
want to be a repeat yeah. customer. Here's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to know why. Was it rushed? Was it, you know?
Somebody go to lunch? What?
Seriously.
I got halfway around the card. It was 5 o'clock and they went home. What happened here?
Yeah. You know, you could say, I might be a customer in another year here, mm-hmm. another 2 years. I want to be a repeat customer, but I want to have a good feeling about you guys.
This is a shocking thing that happened, honestly. But I'm glad nothing bad, quote unquote, happened out of it. It is that whole navigation for me of what's the dealer supposed to do. But I love your approach.
Mm-hmm. See the question from Christopher Lewick about tires?
Yeah,
couldn't pass this one up.
Okay.
This is about tire break-in. And he's heard that you need to break in new tires by driving easy on them for the first 200 to 700 miles, depending on who you ask. What do you think about tire break-in? And do we do it? Because he's asking. He's getting rid of the Primacy tires the previous owner had put on his FRS and having Michelin Pilot Sport AS 3 Plus tires put
on. You're only going the right direction there, Chris.
Well, think about when you watch a race, Formula One, Le Mans, car pulls into the pit, they put new tires on.
Yes.
They don't do any sort of break-in period.
It's not exactly the same, but I do take your point.
There's no like, I'm going to just tiptoe for a couple laps before I get back up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
The quicker they get up to speed is the quicker those tires will heat up and they'll give them maximum performance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, tires don't necessarily give them maximum performance right out of, you know, being fresh and new.
That's
it takes
key.
A lap or two and
that's
then
key.
They really come up.
Yes.
You'll see, you know, in all those races, you'll see they'll, you know, a little bit slidey the first couple of laps and then they wear the, you know, the outer layer yeah. off and then they're perfect. But as far as road tires, you know, do you need to just beat on them immediately? You could just drive a little bit on them, but certainly driving hard right away isn't going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't be a bad thing if you just, you know, I'm not saying take it easy, but just, you don't have to go tracking on them immediately.
I think it's about expectation. I don't think you should expect brand new tires to be at the best they'll ever be the minute that your car starts rolling on them.
Correct, correct.
But a little bit in, it's going to wear off the gloss, if you will. Think about, look at a brand new tire that actually looks kind of glossy.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing that off is good, but I don't think there's a certain number of miles you have to hit.
No, I don't think so either. And again, once you get tires up to operating temperature and thin layers of tire come off, then you should be good.
Honey, I'm settling the tires. I'm just settling the tires in.
I'm preserving our investment.
Yeah. Matt Guerrero, 82, is doing more track daily crushes and trying to make them difficult. He stayed all BMW this time. I don't know if you saw this. 1M, M2 Competition, M3 GTS track daily crush.
It's almost an all BMW podcast.
It's a lot of BMWs today. You're right. I have to daily the 1M. That car is just fun all the time.
Yeah.
And that leaves me with just picking a track car. I like the M2 Competition. I will admit we have not driven the M3 GTS. I would like to think that the M3 GTS is going to be the superior track car based on how it's built.
Sure.
It hasn't gotten a lot of great reviews, but we have not driven it.
Right.
So based on what I know, which is limited in this case, 1M is the daily easily. The M2 competition gets crushed, and the M3 GTS is the track car.
Ooh.
Then I have to keep refilling, what, the water tank in the GTS?
Yeah. I might track that M2 competition. I agree with you on the 1M, because that's just a car you look forward to driving.
Yeah, it's just,
and the fact that you get to drive it on a daily basis
more
is very
orangey
exciting.
Goodness, yes. There's just more of that, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, agreed. Hey, Ashley Baker says, keep up the great work. Listening all the way from Switzerland. Thank
cool.
you, Ashley. If we manage to come out to the ring, is it possible to join as a spectator? We're not sure. As Todd said in a podcast or two ago, it's the trip is a bit on life support at this point.
Yeah,
we will keep
sure
you posted.
Go, yeah.
But we're open. If you're in, we've had people come just for portions of the trip in the
past.
And we welcome it. We would love to see you, but we'll keep you posted.
Tim Norman asked a very pertinent question to this time frame. I don't know if we can answer this definitively, but I'm going to touch on it briefly. He's talked about the fact that of late, people have been driving less. People have been home more, driving less.
Mm.
Has this injured the need for an electric car? Has this made electric cars less viable? Now, there's a ton of stuff going on here, Tim, because car dealers are desperate to sell you a car. The used car market is not doing that well. There's a lot of weird stuff going on right now as a result of the fact we've all been home. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he's saying, if we're driving less, does this hurt EVs and the adoption of EVs, especially if gas is so cheap, because it's crazy cheap right now? And does this mean people don't need to do EVs and it doesn't matter anymore and therefore electric cars will die? Tim, I'll give you the flip side. As people have been driving less, the skies have been nicer.
Mm.
Towns have been clear. LA has had some fantastic photography in the last couple of months.
Yeah.
Where you stand like, you know, 100 miles from the coast, and you look through downtown to the ocean and you can practically see waves crashing. I mean, it's nuts
how
gorgeous everything is. I think that reality of when you have fewer cars on the road, we have less smog is going to keep electric cars in the conversation. I don't think they're going to be injured at all by this.
Follow-up question from Ted Adam Green asking about the million-mile battery and car. Is this a game changer? The million-mile battery is not, it lasts a million miles before you have to charge it again. That is, it's about charge cycles. And based on the research that I can find, it is about 4,000 times to charge and deplete a million-mile battery. The current Tesla batteries are between 300,000 and 500,000 miles as a, you know, here's the battery. But the range is, you know, at the top end is 370 miles, which is
a
lot. That's
which is
fantastic.
Great. It's great. It's plenty. Yeah.
That will continue to go up. But as far as the battery itself, yeah, the chemistry is there. Absolutely. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually great for the long-haul truckers, as a matter of fact, or
that's
long-haul trucks,
yeah.
or, you know, robo-taxis and all that kind of stuff. So in that sense, yeah, but it just, it depends on the charge cycles. If those heavy-use vehicles are getting charged and depleted far more quickly, they need that, but it's not a game changer in terms of everything else unless you can, you know, put that in a passenger car and we can all afford that battery.
Well, but I'm also going to say this, though. Your point is this. We're talking about longevity of battery here.
Yes.
And this is not the reason people aren't buying electric cars.
Correct.
It's not because they're worried about their battery eventually dying in 5 to 10 years. So that's never been the problem. We'll see, though. I mean, look, as these technologies change, it makes electric cars easier to incorporate into people's lives. So there you go.
And as far as I'm working on your most underrated and overrated car on sale right now, but I can answer your question. Which manufacturer has the most or least complicated lineup? Most would be BMW.
Yes.
The least is Chrysler. They got the Pacifica and the 300C. That's it. That's not complicated.
Yeah, they've got like a Voyager variant of the Pacifica. But literally, it is shocking. There's no need to have a Chrysler booth at your auto show.
No.
We're done. We're just, there they are. Yeah.
Guys, thank you for your questions as always. Really appreciate it. We're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.